The opinions expressed on the following sponsored program are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors.
You are tuned to Natural Doc Radio, brought to you by AMT Centers, bringing you health information based on the latest research from respected sources around the world. Learn what you can do to enhance health, strengthen muscles, maximize memory, and energize all the systems of your body. Every day, listen for health information on the latest testing procedures available at AMT centers, as well as the interpretation and action needed based on your test results. Listen for special events at advanced medical testing centers. Tune in. Get healthy. Now, here are your hosts for the hour, Dr. Herb Slavin, MD, and Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutrition counselor.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome once again to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli. I'm here with Dr. Herb Slavin. And for the next hour, some entertaining and informative discussion with regard to supporting your good health. Good morning, Dr. Slavin.
Good morning, Janet. So we have an update. Yesterday we mentioned the upcoming free breast cancer prevention conference, which will be online. I think they're going to have about 20 healthcare practitioners talking about how to prevent breast cancer.
They're going to talk about preventing, not treating.
Well, I haven't heard it myself yet, but I'm assuming that's the title of the conference, Breast Cancer Prevention. And people need to know this because nobody ever talks about preventing disease.
It's very, very interesting because over the past couple of broadcasts, we've talked about how the diagnosis of different diseases here in the United States differs greatly from around the world. The number of cases, the way these diagnoses are being treated. So to have the information about prevention, fabulous.
Now, I think it's a 4-day seminar. If they have 20 doctors, I'm not sure how much time is allotted to each one. It could be several hours each time. So what we've done is on our website, naturaldocradio.com, if you go to that and you scroll down on the lower left part of the page, but you have to scroll down, you'll see where it says Free Breast Cancer Prevention Conference. Click on that, and it'll take you to the sign-up page so that you'll get the information that you need to be able to listen to it. But it's free.
That's a wonderful thing. Now, some people might say, okay, well, what kind of information am I going to get when something is free? And what's the catch? There's got to be some kind of catch. But I have to say, I've seen the lineup of the different practitioners who are going to be presenting their information, and it's very impressive as well as very diverse. So to have that kind of information that comes from a wide range of perspectives, it's very helpful.
Sure. And just go to naturaldocradio.com, scroll down to the bottom of the page, you'll see the link so you can sign up for that. We've talked a lot about vaccinations on this program, and I wanted to read you something that another doctor has written, and she's written a book on vaccines, but this was a little editorial that Suzanne Humphreys, MD, has written. She starts off saying, there is plenty of confusion on the topic of vaccination, especially amongst brainwashed doctors who trusted their medical schools. And that's where it starts. Then the unsuspecting, trusting public trusts them because the medical establishment must know best, right? The doctors are nice people trying to do a good thing. True? And then she goes on to say, I was once one of those brainwashed doctors who believed in the benevolence of the medical system and believed that all I learned was the best that modern times had to offer. It is blazingly clear to me now, though, that much of what is taught in medical school is enormously limited. I now see that most doctors are little more than blind slave technicians who follow the dogma they were taught and were rewarded for repeating, even as their truth unfolds in front of them, dictating otherwise.
How are they rewarded, Dr. Slavin? I don't get that. The viewpoint that I have is these doctors are brainwashed. They blindly recommend the latest pharmaceutical based on sketchy science that's being presented to them, and they don't necessarily make any money by repeating what they've learned in medical school.
No, I just think they're rewarded because they make a living as a physician. I think that's all.
Okay.
So she goes on to say, unbeknownst to most doctors, the polio vaccine history involves a massive public health service makeover during an era when a live, deadly strain of polio virus infected the Salk polio vaccines and paralyzed hundreds of children and their contacts.
It's very, very interesting because I'm about to give a talk to a post-polio support group, and those numbers of individuals in that support group who were inoculated and then suffered the consequences with polio.
So she says that these were the vaccines that were supposedly responsible for the decline in polio from 1955 to 1961. But there is a more sinister reason for the decline in polio during those years. In 1955, a very creative redefinition of polio virus infections was invented to cover the fact that many cases of polio paralysis had no polio virus in their systems at all. While this protected the reputation of the Salk vaccine, it muddled the waters of history in a big way. Even during the peak epidemics, unifactorial poliovirus infection resulting in long-term paralysis was a low-incidence disease that was falsely represented as a rampant and violent crippler by Basil O'Connor's March of Dimes advertising campaign. So they exaggerated the severity of the extent of the severity of the illness. Does that sound like the flu vaccine, that happens every year?
Does it give you a little bit of insight into Zika?
Yeah. At the same time as Basil O'Connor was pulling in $45 million a year to fund the Salk vaccine development.
How many million dollars?
$45 million.
And that is, 1955?
Around there. So, and they want to give $2 billion now. For the Zika virus.
A lot of money in vaccines.
So they were pulling in $45 million a year to fund the Salk vaccine development. Scientists started to realize that other viruses like Coxsackie, Echo, and enteroviruses could also cause polio. They also discussed the fact that lead, arsenic, DDT, and other commonly used neurotoxins could identically mimic the lesions of polio. During the great epidemics in the United States, the pathology called polio was reversed by alternative medical doctors who attested to great success using detoxification procedures available at the time, yet they were categorically ignored. Now it is admitted in the medical literature that other viruses can cause polio, yet few people on the street have any idea. So what are they saying, other viruses causing polio? What they're saying is other viruses can cause paralysis. So before, they were lumping all the diseases that caused paralysis and called it polio. After the vaccine was introduced, then they separated those diseases out, so you had an automatic reduction in the incidence of polio, and they attributed that to the vaccine rather than the redefining of what polio was. So prior to 1954, the following undoubtedly hid behind the name poliomyelitis. You had transverse myelitis, you had aseptic meningitis, you had Guillain-Barré syndrome, and they said that's what Franklin Delano Roosevelt had. I thought it was polio.
So did Franklin Delano Roosevelt think he had polio.
All right. Chinese paralytic syndrome, chronic fatigue syndrome, epidemic cholera, cholera morbus, spinal meningitis, spinal apoplexy, inhibitory palsy, intermittent fever, famine fever, worm fever, post-polio syndrome, acute flaccid paralysis. In other words, they had a lot of other conditions causing paralysis. But before 1954, I think they were probably all called polio, and then they were renamed again. Included under the umbrella term acute flaccid paralysis are poliomyelitis, transverse myelitis, Guillain-Barré syndrome, enteroviral encephalopathy, traumatic neuritis, and Reye syndrome. So before you believe that polio has been eradicated, have a look at the graph, which is...
So you're going to think that polio has been eliminated, but the truth of the matter is there is a kind of scrambling of symptoms, and after the introduction of those polio vaccines, we have other diseases being separated out. Very, very interesting disinformation.
Now, so they have a graph here comparing the incidence of acute flaccid paralysis and the fall of the polio. And it's from 1996 to 2010. So then they say, if you're wondering why there's no data prior to 1996, go to the World Health Organization website for acute flaccid paralysis, and you'll see that there is no data prior to 1996. And note that acute flaccid paralysis continues to rise in 2011. So maybe we haven't eradicated what we used to call polio. We just call it acute flaccid paralysis now. And that's why it looks like there's no polio, but there's acute flaccid paralysis on the rise.
That music, Dr. Slavin, means it's time for us to take a break. Stay tuned. More to come.
Are you looking for expert advice on how to improve your health, but want to do it from the comfort of your home? Now you can conveniently schedule remote consultations with Janet Cimarelli at janetcimarelli.com. Janet is a licensed nutrition counselor specializing in the field of natural foods and supplements. Janet offers consultations via telephone, Skype, or email with convenient and flexible times to meet the needs of your busy life. Janet will educate you on how to manage your diet and lifestyle to overcome illness. Her areas of expertise include allergies, diabetes, heart disease, hormone replacement, weight management, insomnia, and healthy aging. Don't wait. Schedule your appointment with Janet, and she'll guide you to change your diet and change your life. Take control of your health at JanetCimarelli.com. And tune in to hear Janet on Natural Doc Radio, Monday through Friday, 10 to 11 a.m., right here on AM 1470 WNN. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is proud to sponsor Natural Doc Radio, co-hosted by Herbert Slavin and Janet Cimarelli. They're located at 7200 West Commercial Boulevard, Suite 209 in Lauderhill. And you can find them on the web at advancedmedicaltesting.com. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is your premier blood draw center, staffed by professionals with over 15 years' experience. Clean, comfortable, and efficient. They guarantee your appointment time and guarantee the lowest prices. They test for cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes, and more. They draw for all specialty labs, including Access, Health Diagnostics, Simulex, Innovative, Quest, LabCorp, and others. Call them today to set up an appointment. 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332.
You're tuned to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli. I'm here with Dr. Herb Slavin, and we're talking about how you may have been misled by the Centers for Disease Control, the National Institutes of Health, and how doctors may have been misled in their medical education with regard to causes of paralysis. Dr. Slavin?
Okay, so what we were saying is prior to 1954, there was a whole group of diseases associated with paralysis that were all lumped into the heading of polio.
They were all called polio if you had paralysis.
Now,
So
paralysis is the most common sign of acute polio and used for surveillance during polio outbreaks. Acute flaccid paralysis is also associated with a number of other pathogenic agents, including enteroviruses, echoviruses, adenoviruses, among others. But in 1955, there was no attempt to detect anything other than polio in cases of acute flaccid paralysis. Once the vaccine was mass marketed, the game changed.
So
in other words, prior to 1955, everything was polio. And after 1955...
After the vaccines.
Right. Then they started breaking, you know, subdividing the different causes of paralysis so that all automatically the incidence went down.
So what they called polio was separated out from other cases of paralysis, and it appeared in the numbers being published that the polio epidemic had been solved, and it had been solved by vaccines.
So parents today think that the Salk vaccine eliminated any need for ventilators. You remember back then it was the iron lung. And today they have more sophisticated ways of breathing for people. And but back then they had these, what's a good word for it? Infomercials, maybe?
Disinfomercials, perhaps?
They had pictures of children in iron lungs.
And so one of the perceptions that created is that technology has the ability to save us, and that we can eliminate in our thinking the concept of good food and proper rest and clean water, that when a disease strikes, it is technology that will get us well again.
Here's another interesting fact. The polio vaccine had the fastest licensing in FDA history. Now, I think in all fairness, there probably weren't that many vaccines prior to polio. You had smallpox, and I'm not sure how many other vaccines were around at that time. But I guess, and of course, going forward, with all the vaccines that have been licensed after polio, it's still the fastest approval time.
Well, the flu vaccine gets approved every year, fast track, and we don't even know if it is the correct strain.
It was approved for commercial production after only a two-hour deliberation amongst the licensing committee in a pressured environment.
I'd like to know who that licensing committee was, how much scientific information and understanding they brought to the committee meeting.
So these scientists witnessed a vaccine that was escorted to market before academic and community doctors had a chance to read any published reports on the safety studies and before the results of the big polio vaccine trial made it into any medical journal.
It's very, very interesting because Sabin and Salk, you understand the science now, you dissect it, so to speak, and you find it quite flawed.
If these scientists had had any more say, it is likely that the Qatar disaster and the Wyeth problem, both events that led to crippling or death of vaccine recipients just weeks following the hurried vaccine licensing, could have been averted. Sounds very reminiscent of what we go through now with different vaccines.
Well, you just mentioned the other day about how many girls wind up in the emergency room within 30 or 60 days after receiving the HPV vaccine.
Previously, if the vaccine had been distributed as an experimental product, not a licensed product, the committee was asked to come to a decision very quickly. There was discussions of the report that Dr. Francis had given, but we were not in a position to discuss it very intensively because we had not seen the report prior to this morning, and the report was distributed to us after the presentation. This is a quote from what happened back then. In other words, they're just saying that this thing was really rushed through. And they say that's only the beginning of the polio story, the likes of which currently serve as the foundation of modern belief in vaccination, even by those who may have doubts regarding current vaccine policy. So Dr. Humphreys goes on to say, no vaccines are safe. Having efficacy means an antibody response is generated, not that they keep you from getting sick. So all they have to prove.
And just with regard to efficacy and keep you from getting sick, the mumps outbreak in Harvard has to do with people who were vaccinated against mumps.
There are many other ways to keep children healthy other than injecting them with disease matter, chemicals, animal DNA, animal proteins, detergents, and surfactants that inflame and weaken the blood-brain barrier, potentially causing inflammation and other problems. They described what vaccinations do to people. Do you know how many doctors learn about vaccines in medical school? When we participate in pediatrics training, we learned that vaccines need to be given on schedule.
Whoa.
We learned that smallpox and polio were eliminated by vaccines. We learned that there's no need to know how to treat diphtheria because we won't see it again anyway.
And, okay, so polio has been eliminated, but the situation with paralysis still occurs. We've just redefined what the paralysis is and what the polio is.
We are indoctrinated with the mantra that vaccines are safe and effective, neither of which is true. Doctors today are given extensive training on how to talk to hesitant parents, how to frighten them by vastly inflating the risks during natural infections.
How to frighten them. Ooh, what a professional perspective. What a scientific supported perspective.
They are trained on the necessity of twisting parents' arms to conform or fire them from their practices. Doctors are trained that nothing bad should be said about any vaccine, period.
And if ever that was a profile of brainwashing, that you are supposed to strong arm your patients into compliance, outrageous.
Historically, it's been commonplace since the times of the deadly smallpox vaccines to discourage or silence scholarly, thoughtful, and cautious opposition to mass vaccination policies. This is politics, plain and simple, in the environment of cronyism and corporationism that has invaded the supposed healthcare industry.
So we have to understand that what is being presented to us as patients is not necessarily high quality scientific information to support our good health, but rather it is the corporate takeover of political decision-making.
The opinions of learned anti-vaccinationist doctors are not permitted on CNN, Fox News, or in mainstream literature, probably because if they broadcast on such media outlets, the unsuspecting public would do an about-face. Instead, the publicity that mainstream media concedes often involves a parent who's opposed to vaccination after a child becomes vaccine injured.
So with all of the money that the vaccine manufacturers are able to create as income for their corporations, there is no place for vaccine injured individuals to receive compensation or assistance to recover from that vaccine injury.
Now, what I just passed along was actually news to me that they renamed the polio virus. Well, they didn't rename it. They included
reclassified that whole.
Because what I had previously read was they just changed the definition of polio from a paralysis that lasted for at least 24 hours to one that had to last for 30 days. But here's something else, and this is comes under the heading.
Before you get to that, Dr. Slavin, I just want to say that the talking heads on television news reports and so on, and I'm going to reference specifically Sanjay Gupta talking about for the lead-poisoned babies and children in Flint, Michigan, there is no option. When indeed there is very much a variety of options, chelation therapy, number one, for severely disabled individuals because of that lead poisoning. So here's just one example how those talking heads misguide people.
So this comes from a headline that says the real vaccine scam is not that they cause autism, but that if they don't even work.
Is very much a variety of options. Chelation therapy, number one, for severely disabled individuals because of that lead poisoning. So here's just one example how those talking heads misguide people.
So this comes from a headline that says the real vaccine scam is not that they cause autism, but that they don't even work. The number of diseases have not really gone away. They've just been renamed. So measles, they used to, you know, everybody with a rash and a fever had measles if you were an infant.
And so there was an outbreak of measles of people having been vaccinated against that disease.
But then they reclassified it after the introduction of the vaccine, and they called it roseola or fifth disease.
Right.
And
they actually, the pediatricians are coming up with some very, very inventive names to call those rashes in infants and toddlers. Dr. Slavin, I hear some music. That means it's time for us to take a break. And when we come back, more information to support your good health. Stay tuned.
Did you know that you can be eating a healthy diet, but that your body may not be absorbing the vitamins and nutrients from your foods? Advanced Medical Testing Centers is a premier blood draw center servicing Genova Diagnostics Lab. Genova offers an advanced comprehensive blood test that identifies your body's deficiencies in absorbing vitamins, nutrients, and essential cofactors. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is located at 7200 West Commercial Boulevard in Lauderhill. They offer an on-time appointment guarantee and the lowest price guarantee. Schedule your appointment today for a blood draw for the Genova Diagnostics Nutritional Evaluation Test. Call Advanced Medical Testing Centers at 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332. Or visit us at amtcenters.com.
Hi, I'm Janet Cimarelli, and I'm here to tell you about Dr. Herb Slavin, the medical director of the Institute of Advanced Medicine in Lauderhill. The Institute brings the latest natural approaches to health, supported by research. We offer a full range of traditional and holistic treatments. The primary goal of the Institute of Advanced Medicine is to give you, the patient, the information you need to stay healthy and live long. So before you feel sick, before you develop symptoms, come see the team at the Institute of Advanced Medicine. You can call today, 954-748-4991, to learn all about the services offered at the Institute. Services from on-demand to chiropractic, from natural skin solutions to nutrition testing and support. 954-748-4991. You can visit drslavin.com to learn more. And welcome back. You're tuned to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli. I'm here with Dr. Herb Slavin, and we're talking about how you have possibly been medically misled.
And to help raise the curtain on a lot of this, I want to remind people, if you go to our website, naturaldocradio.com, and you scroll down on the front page, lower left corner, you'll see the link to the Breast Cancer Prevention Conference, which will be online. It's a free conference. And if you click on that link, they'll tell you what you have to do to be able to listen in. It's going to be in a couple of weeks in May, over, I think, a four-day period.
So the 15th through the 20th, I believe, are the dates.
Okay. But you'll learn everything you have to learn when you click that link. So we'll see what,
Okay,
and so, by the way, we're going to have Dr. Mastavoy on Thursday on the program. He's the one that's interviewed all the healthcare providers in this video. So we'll be talking about what you can expect to learn and see on this presentation.
A thought occurred to me, Dr. Slavin. In the news lately has been the connection between the daily use of talcum powder and the potential to develop ovarian cancer. It's very, very interesting to me. We are certainly understanding connections between exposure to certain substances and the development of a specific disease. I'm wondering if any of the additional ingredients besides the virus in a vaccine might be contributing factors to so undermining your immune system that you are vulnerable to a particular virus or bacteria or a specific type of cancer. It's very interesting to me because yesterday you were talking about the relationship between the viral presence in your body and the possibility of developing cancer.
Well, I was, in that context, I was saying that we know that they've proven the association with viruses and cancer in some of them, like the human papillomavirus and cervical cancer. I'm not sure if, I can't think of any other cancers offhand that they've made a strong connection.
But we don't necessarily know.
But we can't say that it doesn't.
Exactly.
You know, you can't prove it. It hasn't been shown either way. Otherwise, they just say, well, we don't know what causes that cancer, except, well, smoking does. But is smoking the direct cause of cancer, or does it weaken your immune system, perhaps allowing some infectious agents to flourish that might create the problem? But I just want to just go back to talcum powder for a second. Because I never really paid too much attention to talcum powder.
I think a lot of people haven't. It's in this lovely pink and blue bottle, or container, suggested that we use it for our babies. Our babies will be drier and happier with it. And no discussion of what the downside might be.
So it's a mineral made up of magnesium, silicon, and oxygen. And we know what it's used for. It helps to absorb moisture, cuts down on friction. It's used in a lot of cosmetic products, such as baby powder and adult body and facial powders, as well as in a number of other consumer products. In its natural form, here's the interesting thing. Some talc contains asbestos, which is a substance known to cause cancer in and around the lungs when inhaled.
And that information with regard to how dangerous asbestos is has been around for 40 years or more.
But do you think, if you can remember back when you used to use talcum powder on babies, and you just...
Salt and pepper, yeah.
You know, you probably were inhaling some of the powder.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. They say, here, this is good news. All talcum products used in homes in the U.S. have been asbestos-free since the 1970s. Most concerns about a possible link between talcum powder and cancer have been focused on whether people who have long-term exposure to natural talc fibers at work, such as talc miners, are at higher risk of lung cancer from breathing them in, and whether women who apply talcum powder regularly to the genital area have an increased risk of ovarian cancer. So,
what's interesting is the information has been deliberately suppressed. So there hasn't been a truly scientific discussion about the risks versus the benefits.
So I think that don't use talcum powder. You know, I think they've shown there's a good risk for ovarian cancer, but it's small. And just be careful about it.
Okay, so here's the thing. Some women may have decided that the aluminum content in deodorants might be a risk for developing breast cancer, and consequently, they've eliminated that and possibly switched to a little bit of talcum powder. Very possible that that switch isn't necessarily a health-supporting choice.
So that's, you know, so there is, they say, it's funny how they define things. So they say, based on limited evidence from human studies of a link to ovarian cancer, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, and I, you know, don't you love these long names? And they'll tell you who they really represent. So they go on to say that that agency classifies the general use of talc-based body powder as possibly carcinogenic in humans. So do you feel safe using a possibly carcinogenic agent?
Not me. I will avoid possibly carcinogenic agents.
Well, glyphosate is possibly carcinogenic agent too.
I do my very best to avoid genetically modified foods because they are very much carrying that glyphosate into my body.
So we're giving you specific information about how different serious outbreaks have been renamed in order to make it look like the vaccines were really effective, when in reality nothing had changed. They just said, okay, the incidence of polio declined because they didn't include all the other conditions that were previously included under polio. Polio, by the way, was a virus that, when they talked about polio, they were talking about viruses conditions associated with paralysis. So prior to 1955, any condition associated with paralysis was labeled polio. After that time, then they started using terms like Guillain-Barré, transverse myelitis, Coxsackie, multiple sclerosis. You know, back then, even a patient with MS, what we would call MS today, was termed polio. Cerebral palsy, viral meningitis. These were all conditions that were lumped under the heading of polio.
So beginning, and I'm using the term beginning loosely, in 1955, we can chart the disinformation being spread via the media with regard to renaming disease to make something a pharmaceutical company manufactured looked better than it truly is.
And, I mean, this is plausible because you know how powerful the pharmaceutical company is.
So it has to have been back then in 1955 and before. It's so interesting to me that this has been going on so long, and we as medical consumers have not had our eyes open.
Well, think about it. Have you ever heard anything negative said about a vaccine on the mass media, except sometimes they would put somebody down who talking about vaccines and autism. You know, they would disparage them. But otherwise, you don't have any scientists coming on, you know, stating their side of the issue.
It makes me laugh how the information linking vaccines and autism is presented in the mainstream media, because they're going for a specific connection. when indeed you've mentioned individuals who have struggling immune systems with multiple different assaults to their immune system that are finally put over the edge with a vaccine.
Now, there are other viruses out there. We're not talking about the polio now. We're talking about syncytial virus.
I've not heard of
that
one.
One. RSV, they would abbreviate it. You've heard of croup, strep, pharyngitis, tonsillitis, etc. Prior to the introduction of the vaccine for diphtheria pertussis, all these conditions were lumped under diphtheria pertussis. And then after the vaccine, they said, well, we're going to reduce the number just by renaming the vaccine.
So we're protected against diphtheria and pertussis because of the DPT vaccine and the other diseases. They might still come about, but it isn't diphtheria or pertussis.
Well, trying to understand what's going on here. Vaccines generate billions of dollars in revenue for drug companies as costs paid by the federal government, which purchases half of all vaccines for the nation's children. And that cost has risen 15-fold since 1986. So is this a redistribution of wealth also?
Okay, it's very possible that our listeners have never heard this information before, and we have more to share after these messages.
Are you looking for expert advice on how to improve your health, but want to do it from the comfort of your home? Now you can conveniently schedule remote consultations with Janet Cimarelli at janetcimarelli.com. Janet is a licensed nutrition counselor specializing in the field of natural foods and supplements. Janet offers consultations via phone, Skype, or email with the convenient and flexible times to meet the needs of your busy life. Janet will educate you on how to manage your diet and lifestyle to overcome illness. Her areas of expertise include allergies, diabetes, heart disease, hormone replacement, weight management, insomnia, and healthy aging. Don't wait. Schedule your appointment with Janet, and she'll guide you to change your diet and change your life. Take control of your health at janetcimarelli.com. And tune in to hear Janet on Natural Doc Radio, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m., right here on this station. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is proud to sponsor Natural Doc Radio, co-hosted by Dr. Herbert Slavin, M.D., and Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutrition counselor. We are located at 7200 West Commercial Boulevard, Suite 209 in Lauderhill, and you can find us on the web at amtcenters.com. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is your premier blood draw center, staffed by professionals with over 15 years' experience, clean, comfortable, and efficient. We guarantee your appointment time and guarantee the lowest price. We test for cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes, and more. We draw for all specialty labs, including Access, Health Diagnostic, Singulex, Innovative, Quest, LabCorp, and others. Call us today to set up an appointment. 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332.
Welcome back. You're tuned to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli here with Dr. Herb Slavin.
Okay, here's some more interesting information. The annual immunization costs have gone from $100 per child in 1986 to $2,192 per child in 2015.
Outrageous.
And
what has happened to our children in that interim? Increased diagnoses of asthma, allergies, certainly a potential connection to autism, ADD, ADHD, and we continue to overwhelm these small bodies with outrageous chemicals.
Now, vaccination prices have gone from single digits to sometimes triple digits in the last two decades. The world's 11 top pharmaceutical companies made more than $700 billion in profits.
$700 billion.
Yeah, but not from vaccines. The vaccines just brought in $24
billion. Oh, just annually. $24 billion a year?
Because of rising expense, some doctors have stopped offering immunizations, noting they cannot afford to stock them, the Times said. It added that vaccine patent applications had risen tenfold from the 1990s, marking about 10,000 each year. So people are looking to cash in on vaccines. So there was a another interesting thing. So how do you evaluate whether a vaccine is working or not? Well, you would say, let's see if the incidence of various diseases are on the decline.
Hard to do when they rename the diseases, isn't it?
Right. So that's exactly how they're able to show that they're on a decline. Now, according to Dr. Robert Sears, author of the vaccine book, the number of childhood cases of diseases included on the vaccine schedule in the U.S. in 2007 was pneumococcus, about 10,000 cases a year, diphtheria, 5 cases per year, and 0 cases in some years, tetanus, 1 case per year in children under 5, pertussis, about 10,000 cases a year, hepatitis B, 30 cases in 1-year-olds, 30 cases in 1 to 5-year-olds, rotavirus, 500,000 cases, 50,000 hospitalizations, 20 to 70 deaths, polio, 0 cases since 1985, measles, 50 to 100 cases per year. Mumps, 250 cases a year. Rubella, 250 cases a year. Chickenpox, 50,000 cases a year. Hepatitis A, 10,000 cases a year, most in children age 5 to 14. Flu, millions of cases a year.
Millions?
And meningococcal disease, approximately 3,000 cases a year.
Now, is this in the United States or globally?
No, this is in the U.S. in the year 2000.
Millions of flu cases?
Well, right. Now, you know, they talk about, what, 30,000? Again, it's how you define it, I guess.
Apparently, we're really enlarging the definition there.
So media stories about an occasional local outbreak of a disease, usually designed to promote as much fear as possible, never seem to balance their accounts with readily available statistics supporting the fact that childhood disease facts about childhood disease in the U.S. So from these statistics, I'm not sure if you should come to the conclusion that vaccines are doing a great job or vaccines are not necessary.
The article goes on to say, Dr. Slavin, that indeed the vaccines are more common, but the children are becoming sicker.
Now, so the question comes, has the incidence of serious infectious childhood disease in the U.S. been reduced solely due to widespread use of vaccines, because that's what the vaccine proponents always claim, or has improved sanitation, healthcare, and living condition played a big role both before and after vaccines came on the scene? Are other first world nations, which are currently giving fewer vaccines to their children than the U.S., experiencing a similar drop in infectious disease thanks to improved living conditions? So they go on to say, with some of the highest vaccine rates on earth, does the United States have the world's healthiest children?
When you start to consider the information with regard to childhood depression, learning disabilities, sleep interruption, energy interruption, all of these different refinements of how our bodies function, the vaccines may very well be bringing down that overall beneficial function of the children's bodies.
Well, during the past 30 years, the number of vaccinations our children receive has tripled. And during that same period of time, the number of children with learning disabilities, ADHD, asthma, and diabetes has also more than tripled. Vaccine makers and proponents will tell you that these statistics are unrelated, but no good scientific evidence currently exists that demonstrates vaccines are not contributing to the increasing incidence of chronic illness and disability in our children. More than twice as many children have chronic brain and immune system dysfunction today than they did in the 1970s, when half as many vaccines were given to children. Today in America, 1 in 6 children are diagnosed with learning disability. 1 in 9 suffer from asthma. 1 in 110 develop autism. And 1 in 450 become diabetic.
Dr. Slavin, I had to deliver something a few years ago to a pediatrician's office. And the pediatrician's office was full of parents holding babies who were obviously very ill, runny noses, coughing, crying, whimpering. And the opposite side of that picture was a pediatrician who no longer adhered to the vaccination schedule that is adopted by the Pediatricians Association. And the children in that pediatrician's office were healthy. They weren't dealing with runny noses and just the very minor but unpleasant illnesses, colds and stomach distress and just general feelings of malaise. And it just doesn't make sense to me at the age of 6 weeks, 3 months, to be injecting these extremely toxic substances, because in addition to the active ingredient in the vaccine, there are other ingredients that make you shake your head and wonder who agreed that this was a reasonable thing to include in the vaccine mix. So live and attenuated viruses, but then such things as formaldehyde and some heavy metals.
Okay, so the point I wanted to make was that as we're vaccinating more kids, you see more illness. You can't, ignore that fact. Now, how do you connect the two? So what I wanted to see is whether or not there's any connection between insurance companies and the drug companies. But here's an interesting fact that I came across. The fast food industry has long been under fire for selling high-fat, high-calorie meals that have been linked to weight gain and diabetes. And the financial health of the industry continues to attract investors, including some of the leading insurance companies in the U.S., a new study reports. According to the Harvard Medical School researchers, 11 large companies that offer life, disability, or health insurance owned about $1.9 billion in stock in the 5 largest fast food companies in 2009. But that's an interesting connection there.
A very sad connection, because people aren't thinking about it when they pull up to those drive-in windows, when they order the fries that might not necessarily be what they think they are consuming, when they are consuming those soft drinks that have huge amounts of sugar. And certainly the changes being made from high fructose corn syrup that has very specific damaging effect on the body to cane sugar, but still the sugar intake is far beyond what is regarded as anything near health supporting.
So we're coming to the end of today's program. So
yes,
we're going to continue
are.
This topic a little bit.
I like this topic.
There's a lot of disinformation, and this is the point. It's not just about vaccines, about everything we're being told. You just have to figure out what's their underlying motive and how do we evaluate that, whether or not what we're being told is accurate.
Inside the secret world of drug company rebates. Oh, we're going to blow the whistle tomorrow. And to all of our listeners, thank you for tuning in to Natural Doc Radio. Remember that May 15th to 20th, the online free cancer prevention conference will be available, and you can find out about it at drslavin.com. We'll be back tomorrow at 10.
Listening to Natural Doc Radio, brought to you by AMT Centers, bringing you health information based on the latest research from respected sources around the world. Learn what you can do to enhance health, strengthen muscles, maximize memory, and energize all the systems of your body. Listen every day for health information on the latest testing procedures available at AMT Centers, as well as the interpretation and action needed based on your test results. Listen for special events at Advanced Medical Testing Centers. Tune in again next time and get healthy. The opinions expressed on the preceding sponsored program were strictly those of its hosts, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of the station, its staff, management, or sponsors.